You're listening to CEM Audio Edge Live Talk Radio, your source for completely candid education that's always casino enterprise management caliber, where gaming execs and insiders take uncensored stock of the industry's most relevant and pressing issues. Call in to join the conversation or chat with us online. Remember, you won't find this content anywhere else, so don't miss a single show. CEM Audio Edge starts right now.
Hello and welcome to CEM Audio Edge. Today is Thursday, December 13th, and I'm your host, Kyle Iverson. Today's show is Gaming Law News, where we gather gaming attorneys, policymakers, and commentators to discuss crucial legislation affecting state and federal jurisdictions around the world. Today I'm joined by Stu Hoegner, a gaming lawyer in Toronto, Canada. We will discuss if the city of Toronto is the next battleground for the gaming industry. But up first is our Gaming News Minute from Associate Editor Antonia Ashone.
Thanks, Kyle. Let's take a look at some of the latest gaming industry headlines. Two-thirds of Canadians support the passage of Bill C-290, which would legalize single-event sports betting in Canada. Bill C-290, an act to amend the criminal code, was first introduced in September 2011 and was passed with the unanimous support of all parties in the House of Commons this past March. The Massachusetts State Lottery could start offering online gaming as soon as next year if Treasurer Stephen Grossman has his way. Grossman is asking legislators to change state laws to allow the lottery to offer iGaming. Games that could be offered include an instant ticket chance game, Keno, conventional card games, and other games of chance, along with the traditional jackpot games. If approved, the games could go live by July. In Macau, gaming revenues are rebounding, as indicated by numbers through December 10th. David Bain of Stern AG reports table game revenues of $1.2 billion. That translates a 27% increase for the month to more than $3.7 billion. For more industry news, check out our newswire at casinoenterprisemanagement.com.
Thanks, Antonia. I do want to remind our listeners that you can call in with your questions at 718-766-4250. Again, 718-766-4250, or go to our website chat room and we can get them answered there. You can also join in the conversation if you go to Twitter and follow us at the handle CEM Audio Edge. Well, thanks so much for joining me today, Stu. Hello, Stu, are you there?
Sorry. Can you hear me, Kyle?
There you go. Hey, Stu, thank you for joining me today.
Sorry about that. Very happy to be here. Thanks very much for having me.
No problem at all. Could you start out by telling our listeners more about yourself and your background in the gaming industry?
Sure. I'm a gaming attorney in Toronto. I act for internet poker sites, sports books, casinos, skill games operators, land-based equipment manufacturers, social media entrepreneurs, and some professional poker players, among other clients. I get to cover, grapple with, and keep up with the issues facing the gaming industry, including land-based developments in my hometown, Toronto, which is an awful lot of fun. So,
you get to do a lot, don't you?
yeah, luckily, yes. So it keeps me busy.
So what do you believe a resort complex featuring a hotel, casino, convention space, and other amenities would do for Toronto?
It's a difficult question to answer, especially for a mere lawyer. But Ernst & Young has issued a very extensive report on this exact question, and it's publicly available if your listeners want to review it. Based on their work and assumptions, they estimate a non-recurring bump to GDP in the Toronto economy between $1.7 and $2.1 billion the assumption of an integrated resort complex involving a casino here in Toronto, with recurring GDP increases annually of between $1.5 and $2 billion. So again, that's for an integrated entertainment complex, so not just casino, but exhibition and conference space, hotel, retail, other amenities, much like the integrated resorts we're used to seeing in Las Vegas. For a casino alone, without any other amenities, E&Y puts the benefit at about half of the value of the integrated resort. So from anywhere from $1.9 to $1.2 billion recurring annually. As far as initial projections go, they estimate that the integrated resort will provide an injection from sales of city-owned land of up to $250 million. It's going to depend on where the casino would be located if it's approved for the city, and recurring hosting fees of up to about $168 million in incremental recurring property taxes of from anywhere from $22 to $30 million. So that's the that's the financial aspect. On the jobs side, the jobs impact of the integrated resort is projected to be anywhere from 6,800 to 8,500 full-time jobs in construction, and then 16,000 to 20,000 full-time jobs recurring in ongoing operations. And then I guess finally they estimate that a TO integrated casino venue will have important tourist appeal, which is a key thing for Toronto, which does have an important tourism component to its GDP. Now, as anyone who's dealt with casinos knows, it's not all upside.
Right.
There will be costs to the city in terms of infrastructure and services. There may be additional costs related to social issues, i.e., increased crime, potentially emergency services, and problem gambling. This is addressed in the EY report, but it isn't quantified in that report. So it's not by no means is it a whitewash. They go through and they quantify a lot of the benefits that would accrue, they project will accrue to the city, but they also reference potential downside risk.
So could you elaborate on Toronto being the industry's next major battleground?
It's a good question. I don't know how major a battleground it will be, but it's an area that's of interest. Four of the large international casino interests are vying to partner with the province of Ontario here in Toronto to create what ideally would be for them an integrated entertainment resort involving a casino. But as I mentioned, there are these potential costs that are alarming some people in the city of Toronto, and they alarm some people in the city council. The casino does come with a lot of economic benefits, but there's a segment of Toronto that wants nothing to do with a casino, or they want to see it safely at a distance. So, there's a certain segment of the population that would be quite comfortable keeping casinos down in Niagara Falls or over in Windsor or up in Rama, where they are now, and limit Toronto, for example, to Woodbine Racetrack, which is the major gaming as far as non-lottery gaming operation that's available in the city of Toronto now. So it's a counterpoint. There are people that want to give this a try and see some attraction like this in Toronto as against the people who don't.
So Toronto Mayor Rob Ford backs the casino idea, but the Toronto City Council has 43 members. What is the process that needs to take place to get full approval for the casino idea? Do all 43 members have to agree?
No. Toronto Council has 45 members, including the mayor. And Toronto Council as a whole has been clear that they want to proceed cautiously on this project. They have been holding citizen meetings across the city. Those are ongoing. They are soliciting reports from Toronto Public Health and the Toronto Police Service. Those are mentioned, are referenced in the E&Y report that I spoke about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to thoroughly vet this in committee. OLG had earlier suggested – sorry, OLG is Ontario Lottery and Gaming Corporation, the provincial lottery monopoly here in Ontario. They had earlier suggested that they wanted a decision this year, but they've also been very clear that they are not going to force a casino project on an unwilling municipality. So each municipality that decides to accept this kind of a project is going to have to agree to it. OLG is not going to force it on any particular municipality. Toronto Council won't really make up its mind until the spring, if then. So between now and then, there's lots of forces on Toronto Council that are against the casino. So the mayor has the mayor has his one vote, but he is just one of 45 members. The interesting part of the mayor's role is that he has been much in the news lately, as you may have noticed. He has been removed from office by a provincial by a superior court judge in the province, owing to a conflict of interest in a vote that took place some time ago when he was on Toronto Council as a councillor.
Oh, really?
That decision has been stayed pending the mayor's appeal, so he continues to be in office. But if that appeal fails, he will be out of office,
right.
And that could make for an interesting dynamic on the casino project. Again, he's just one of 45 votes, so I don't necessarily see that affecting things one way or the other. But
right.
it's something to keep in mind. His powers of moral suasion and bringing people along at this stage might be impaired, given that his own position is sort of up in the air at this point.
Oh, most definitely. Let's talk about the Singapore model for a moment here. Singapore approved two casinos back in 2005,
mm-hmm.
and they could surpass the Strip as being the world's second largest gaming market behind Macau. Do you believe that if a casino was built in Toronto that it would have that same success, or what do you believe would happen?
It's tough to say. To some extent, we won't know unless and until Toronto decides it wants to move forward. But OLG expects that TO residents will comprise from 35% to 50% of the customer base of a GTA casino. And
mm-hmm.
the E&Y report states that Toronto residents spend between $500 and $650 million at OLG venues outside of Toronto each year. The report says that a significant portion of that amount could be retained at a casino within the city. And when you add that to non-Toronto residents playing at a Toronto casino, both existing and new tourists, as well as incremental spending generated by convention-related tourism, it could be a great offering and commercially viable. The spending is estimated to be at least $1 billion per year.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think anyone's really looking at something that would rival Macau or the Strip in Vegas, or necessarily what's happening in Singapore, but it could be a very attractive commercial offering. It could be very good for OLG, it could be good for surrounding businesses, and it could be good for the operator that's choose to partner with the province to implement the casino resort here.
Do you think that as of late, the reports that were coming from Singapore, they have actually reported the lowest gaming revenue in 18 months? Do you think that has some people in Toronto being skeptical about following that Singapore model?
I don't. It's difficult to say again, but I'm not sure that Singapore is rightly or wrongly being looked to by Toronto as something that could be instructive here. And I think that might be a symptom of the fact that some of the debate around a Toronto casino right now is quite is not really being driven by empirical evidence and a lot of facts. I think you've got in some quarters, not across the board, but in some quarters you have a little bit of hysteria about a Toronto casino.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that could be very much affecting the debate. Time will tell. We'll see how things shake out the rest of this year, and more important into the spring and next year. But I wonder how much different markets are being used to really compare and instruct what could happen here in Toronto.
So do you know of players that have voiced interest for the Toronto market?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that most of the major casino interests in Las Vegas and in the American Gaming Association have expressed an interest in coming here. There were news reports this past year of Sheldon Adelson meeting with the mayor of Toronto here. Caesars, MGM, and Wynn have all expressed an interest in coming here in different forms. I think that there might be different interest levels among those different potential partners, based on where the casino resort would be located in the city. But at least those four have expressed a clear desire to be part of a project here in Toronto.
Even from this article that that we're referring to here, it even says that some of them were passing each other in Toronto City Hall going from meeting.
Yeah. I think there was a remark about Jan Jones coming across, one of her colleagues up here in Toronto. But yeah.
So what needs to be taken into account when trying to find a location for this complex is who chooses it and where do you think would be prime location?
All the usual things are going to have to be taken into account, from space to who owns the land, infrastructure, how close or far away the project is from downtown, or how close or far away it is from a gaming facility with a proven track record like Woodbine Racetrack, which is here in the city. So all of those things are considerations. Toronto Council is going to be the one that decides where this project is going to set down. Casino operators, as I mentioned, have indicated a preference for developing an integrated resort downtown, either in the entertainment district down by King and Peter Streets or at Exhibition Place that's down by the lake. The Portlands of Toronto, which are slightly east of downtown, are also on the table. Woodbine, as I mentioned, Woodbine Racetrack, is not, I understand, a preferred location, although, again, there are operators who have said that they're interested in any project that is permitted within the city limits. But again, talk of where a casino resort would be at this stage is fine, but the dispositive question is whether a casino will be permitted within the city limits at all. And then once we get past that sort of threshold issue, then we'll see a lot more discussion and a lot more, I think, serious debate about where the casino will be located within the city.
And at the end of the day, the where is up to the city, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
So could
I want to back up on that. It is
sure.
And it isn't. The city has to pick a location that has a viable partner that's willing to come in and bid and work with the city and work with OLG on the project. So the city can't simply select wherever it decides it wants the casino to be. It's going to be constrained in terms of its options. But again, as long as it's sort of within the ballpark of picking one of those, say, four places that are sort of on the table, and working with the partners to choose the right spot, I think they're going to get some traction with it.
So could you elaborate on the effects of cannibalization and if this would be present in Toronto if a casino complex was constructed?
Yeah, that's a great question. So just for your listeners, the concept of cannibalization is that a casino will come in and suck business from the surrounding area and basically impair local businesses and cause them to lose money. This is an issue that's been getting a lot of play in the media here in Toronto. UNLV, University of Nevada, Las Vegas, was commissioned to do a study by the Canadian Gaming Association on this very point. And they found that, based on the empirical research available, surrounding industries have grown after the introduction of casinos. And the UNLV report suggests that this should be especially true of a resort opened in Toronto, as it should attract significant tourist trade. They also found that the new casino's net economic effects on existing nearby casinos, it's not just unrelated businesses or hospitality, but casinos,
right,
other gaming venues, is positive. This might not extend to lottery ticket sales, the report notes, but again, the overall net effect as far as gaming options writ large is positive. And UNLV attributes this to an agglomeration effect. That is where the presence of more casinos leads to activity across the whole sector. This was empirically tested in a study of the Missouri gaming market. And the authors in that study found that the presence of a new casino increases demand for all nearby gaming properties.
Okay.
Now, one has to be careful transplanting data from one market to another, and especially across borders where there are different institutional structures in play. But the empirical research that's being done suggests a net gain, not just for industries as a whole in Toronto, but potentially for the casinos down in Niagara Falls, or that I mentioned that are up in Rama, a couple of hours outside of the city, potentially. So the whole concept of cannibalization, which really, again, has got a lot of play in Toronto, the available evidence suggests that, if anything, it's going to be a net gain for other gaming properties, not just for the economy as a whole. So that's something that needs to be kept in mind.
Definitely. So, Stu, is there anything else that we missed or anything that you'd like to add today?
I'm not sure we missed much. I guess just that we'll be seeing a significant expansion of gaming in this province, both mm-hmm. in terms of land-based and remote gaming. And the question that Toronto has to ask itself is whether it wants to be part of it or whether it wants to see those benefits go to other communities. So with that direction and with Bill C-290 that Antonia mentioned at the beginning of the show, there's mm-hmm. lots going on up here in Canada on the gaming front, and lots to monitor and lots to sink our teeth into.
Yeah, definitely. It's very exciting. Well, thanks for being on the show today, Stu.
Kyle, thanks so much for having me again. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, we'll have to have you on again in the very near future. For our listeners, remember, you can visit CasinoEnterpriseManagement.com to check out more Audio Edge shows and other great content. And as always, thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to CEM Audio Edge Live Talk Radio. Until next time, listen to episodes on demand and study up on industry issues at www.CasinoEnterpriseManagement.com.